You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? This week's guest is Mitch Duckler. Mitch is author of The Indispensable Brand and a founder and managing partner at Full Surge, a brand and marketing strategy consultancy based in Chicago, Illinois. He has more than 25 years of brand management and management consulting experience at Unilever, the Coca-Cola Company, Vivaldi Partners Group, and Profit, where he co-led the brand strategy practice area. His client base includes Fortune 500 companies and numerous world-class brands such as Boeing, Deloitte, and General Electric. Mitch is a faculty member of the Association of National Advertisers, ANA, School of Marketing. Mitch, welcome to On Brand.
Thank you, Nick. It's great to be here.
Well, I am thrilled to be chatting with you. And in looking at your bio, what I wanted to chat a bit about is the your time as leader of a brand strategy practice area, because that combines a lot of words, and I think sometimes branding words can be obtuse for people to understand. But what does it mean when we talk about brand strategy in practice?
Sure. Well, and that refers to when I worked with Profit. Profit is a brand strategy consultancy. And like a lot of consultancies, they had different, what consultants refer to as practice areas, which are folks that are deeply experienced in certain subject matter areas. So in the case of Profit, there were some for brand positioning. There were others for marketing strategy, research and analytics, and so forth. And what I was is a co-lead for the brand strategy practice area, which involved things like brand positioning, value proposition, brand architecture and portfolio strategy, and so forth. You know, we helped develop the intellectual property, if you will, that the firm used with its clients to go to market.
So in tackling the kind of beast that is brand strategy, I think one kind of fork in the road or challenge that people run into is the 1,000-foot up level of brand strategy, the real big, impactful, directional stuff, but then also the tactical level, the 10 to 100 feet off the ground of what are we doing and how does that larger strategy get us from point A to point B?
Yeah, I agree. And I think they're both important. It's very often clients will be good at one of those levels, if you will, to use your analogy, and not so much at the other. So in order to be an effective brand builder, you need to simultaneously be effective at both levels. And I would call that 30,000-foot level things like brand positioning and brand essence. So what is it that your brand stands for, and what is it that makes you and your brand different from all other competitive alternatives in the market? But then very importantly, it all gets down to tactics, as you say, and activation. And how do you bring that positioning, that unique positioning to life in the market with your customers or consumers, right? Everything from the product service offering that you provide to the experience and every touch point that comprises the brand experience. And that's really where the rubber meets the road, right? You can have the best positioning, the best strategy, but if it isn't executed on strategy, it's going to be ineffective.
Yeah, well, and it does seem like it's really a case for that bridge, because it seems like these are the two challenges. You have to have the big picture view, but you also need to be able to bring it to life at all of the levels that you just outlined. Is that a step that many out there are missing when it comes to brand strategy? Is to stick with the metaphor of building that bridge?
Yes, I think it absolutely is. There's, you know, all too often there's, and I've unfortunately been a part of this at times in my career where we help a client define a brand strategy at that 30,000 foot level, right? Here is your positioning, and this is what makes you stand out and different from your competitive set. And then unfortunately, sometimes when we go away, if we're not continuing to engage with them or ensuring a strong handoff, that work becomes a proverbial three-ring binder on a shelf, right? That it looked great in an executive presentation, and everybody nodded and shook their head and agreed to it, and then it got stowed away and never looked at again. And when you do that, it's, you know, it's only a little bit better than worthless, right? Because if you're not taking that positioning strategy and executing against it on all aspects of your business, again, it's, you're not going to be successful. So you need people that can think at both levels, right? To identify that big idea, that's the basis for your positioning, but then also a way to make it come to life.
So what are some of the other bridging tools that we can use to make sure that our positioning actually helps us do some of those things?
Well, there are a few. I would start with your product service offering itself. So when you think about your brand positioning, as many consultants will say, your brand positioning is a promise, right? It's an inherent promise that you as a brand builder are making to your target audience, to the people that are purchasing that brand. So you want to start with the products and services and make sure that, first of all, you're offering the types of products or services that your customers want and that are consistent with your brand promise. And then it goes through every aspect of the experience. And we typically coach our clients to think about experience in three different phases: pre-purchase, purchase, and then post-purchase. And when you think about those phases, there are touch points in each of those that are critical to the overall experience. And we coach our clients and we help our clients think about every one of those critical touch points within the lens of the brand positioning, right? And what is your brand positioning? What is your brand promise? And does that touch point live up to it? Is it consistent with it? Does it deliver on it? And we find that to be a very effective tool to help, as you call it, that bridging between strategy and execution.
Yeah, well, with that answered and with those phases defined, I think it's not only this idea of bridging, but with those three phases that you talked about, it's understanding where we need to bridge that experience as well that's key.
Absolutely. And for that, there's typically, we encourage clients to think about those steps, if you will, on that ladder or that bridge, to take it one step further in terms of two different dimensions. Because if you don't, it can get very overwhelming, right? There are literally hundreds, if not thousands, of touch points that you can break down a customer experience into, and you can't do everything. So think about every touch point along two different dimensions. First, which dimension or which touch points of the experience are the most critical, right? Not all touch points pre-purchase, purchase, and post-purchase are equally important. They're not all created equal. Some are just more critical than others. So which are the most important, and which do you have the biggest gap currently versus your positioning, right? So if you think about your positioning as a promise, which of those touch points have the largest gap between what that touch point should deliver based on your positioning and what it is currently delivering today? And when you think about those two dimensions, right, what's most important and where are your largest gaps, it can focus you on the biggest bang for the buck, right, where you want to focus your attention and resources.
Yeah. And I think that asking those two questions is key and a good test, because I think the other problem that we have, especially that first question you said about the most important touch points, I think a lot of times we get overwhelmed by the amount of touch points that we have, especially today. But if you look at what ones are truly most important, most critical to your experience, there's usually a couple that stand out.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, not all of them are created equally, and some are. And if you think about it in those phases, you know, it makes a lot of sense, right? Your pre-purchase, there's a lot of things that are about awareness building. And some touch points, you know, are just inherently better at others at building awareness. Others during purchase help you decide between different alternatives, right? So those are the ones, you know, decision-making that you want to make sure are optimized. And post, right? So you think about things like guarantees and warranties and follow-up service and satisfaction surveys and things like that. Some of those are just inherently more important than others. So it's really kind of breaking it down. And like I said, identifying the few most important, but importantly throughout the entire process, right? That you shouldn't be focused entirely pre-purchase or post-purchase or even during purchase, right? You want to make sure you're kind of looking at the entire journey and picking those touch points across all three phases.
Are you enjoying this conversation about branding? If so, I'd love to bring my Brand Now keynote speech to your next conference or corporate event. Based on my popular book, Brand Now, this talk breaks down the seven dynamics of building a standout brand in our crowded, distracted world. Entertaining and educational, your audience will learn, laugh, and leave with ideas they can implement right away. Learn more, including watching video and viewing popular presentation topics at nickwestergaard.com/speaking. That's nickwestergaard.com/speaking. Now back to the show. So talk a bit about being indispensable as your book outlines, being an indispensable brand.
Yeah, so what I like to ask clients, and frequently do so, is, you know, if your brand, and these are all, you know, brand builders, right? Marketers and brand builders for some of the biggest companies in the country, if not the world, but if your brand were to go away tomorrow, would anybody even notice, much less care? And, you know, and be honest, right? It's easy to kind of be myopic and say, well, of course, we're the most important thing in our customers' lives. But are you really, right? Would they care? Or would they find a suitable and satisfactory alternative relatively quickly? And in my experience, when executives are honest with themselves, they answer, no, we are not indispensable. Yes, our customers may like us. They may like our brand. They may even prefer it. But at the end of the day, if we went away, it would be no big deal. They would find a suitable replacement fairly easily. And that is really the crux of indispensable. An indispensable brand is one that your customers, especially your most loyal customers, truly cannot live without. And there are not a lot of them to be found.
So this is the likely follow-up question, when not a lot of them to be found. Who are some good examples of brands then that do pass that test?
Yeah, there are a few that I've worked with and come across, and to be honest, they're the brand. It's not going to be a surprising, right? A list. These aren't exactly new and unheard of brands. They're some of the best known brands in the world, but I think they do great jobs at being indispensable. And some of them I consider indispensable for me personally. But one is certainly Starbucks. I know that Starbucks is so ingrained in my daily routine. I rarely go a day without a Starbucks, sometimes two. I'm sometimes embarrassed to admit, right? But that brand, if it went away tomorrow, by that definition I used earlier, I would be very disappointed, right? It would be, you know, sure, I would go on, right? I could continue to live, but it would be a hole. It would be a void in my life, because it is a brand that has meant a lot to me and is an integral part of my life, even in a small way. And that's really what we mean by indispensable. If that brand, yes, there are other alternatives, right? There are other restaurants and coffee shops like a Starbucks, but that is one that has, you know, reached the level of indispensability with me.
Well, and you're not, to your point about there's other restaurants, to dig a little deeper, you're not missing the coffee from that experience.
Exactly. And I think that is the key. There's a difference between being in a category of one and being indispensable. I think when you're in a category one, which is very, very rare in this day, right, you're the only alternative available. That's an enviable position, right? And you're almost inherently indispensable. But Starbucks is a brand where, yeah, they are indispensable, even though there are other alternatives that are arguably equally effective for that occasion, right? You can go to Dunkin' Donuts. You can go to a number of locally owned coffee shops that will offer the same type of products and service and experience, right? But because there is something special about Starbucks and it has forged a bond with me and with a lot of other consumers, you know, for that reason, even though there are other alternatives and they aren't necessarily a category of one, they are indispensable.
Yeah, because and that's because of what they mean, what else they're doing beyond that, that comes to life in various touch points, activations, everything in between you and the coffee.
I totally agree. Yeah. And I think, you know, you think back 20 to 30 years ago, and if somebody were to tell you that people would one day stand in line to pay $5 for a cup of coffee, they would have thought you were nuts, right? You're from a different planet. And yet that's exactly what's happening. I mean, not only are people paying that kind of money, but they're gladly going out of their way and standing in line. And it's, yes, the coffee, the product itself is good, but it is the other things that surround it. It is, by and large, in most instances, very good service. It is the relationship that many consumers have with the barista at their local Starbucks. It is the experience and the ambiance, right? To your point, it is far more than just a cup of coffee, which arguably nobody would pay $5 for. There is something more there.
Yeah.
And that's the brand.
So we look at the Starbucks of the world. We look at this question that many see as a pretty compelling test for building a brand that matters, that means something. So what do you do when you're not the Starbucks? I'm sure that's a big part of the focus of the book, is speaking of closing some of those gaps. How can brands and brand builders listening here work on closing up the gap of indispensability?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, one of the things I talk about at length in the book fairly early on, especially when we start talking about positioning, at the end of the day, being indispensable requires you to be differentiated. Not just differentiation. It's necessary, but not sufficient, right? But it is necessary. Yeah. If you are not differentiated, meaningfully differentiated in a compelling and relevant way, you stand no chance to be indispensable. So in the book, I talk about a lot of different ways that you can explore your brand, both internally and with customers, to identify what is different about you, what makes you different and better and special versus competitive alternatives. And I encourage clients to think about their brand in four different ways, four different very simple questions. They're the journalist questions. What, how, why, and who, right? And what I mean by that is, what benefit, what value, or what utility does your brand offer, right? That's typically how brands are differentiated or positioned, right? It's based on a what or a benefit. The second is how. So maybe your benefit is generic or universal, right? If you're not offering that benefit, you're not even in the game. So maybe you differentiate based on a how. A how can be your method, your approach, an ingredient that you offer, some sort of experience. So even though the benefit may be generic and universal, the way you do it isn't.
Yeah.
Right? And I would argue that's very much about Starbucks. It's very much about the how, the way they deliver service and the experience they provide. The third way is why. So, Nick, you're probably very familiar with purpose branding and Simon Sinek's famous TED Talk, Start With the Why. While most every company and even brands have a purpose or a mission, not every brand is defining its very essence by it. But some brands, like a Patagonia, do, right? They are all about solutions for the environmental crisis. And their products, although they are very good, they are almost secondary. People care almost as much about that company as the products they provide. And that's a purpose or a why-driven brand. And then the following is who? Again, every brand has, or at least should have, a target audience, but not every brand would define its essence based on that. There are some brands like Mountain Dew is one that has a following and a target audience that is so distinct to that brand that they almost define it by them, right? This is the kind of the Gen X, the adventurous, X game type explorer, right? Male teen are slightly older that are very adventurous, kind of daredevil. They're into skateboarding and snowboarding, into an extreme sport. They are almost associated with that as much as they are the product of a lemon lime soda. So when you look at those four different lenses, you get a sense for what potentially could make you different, and you need to marry that up obviously with what's relevant to consumers.
I love the idea of thinking of them as lenses too, because I think a lot of times we maybe answer those questions, those journalist questions, but looking at them in a way that kind of, with a lens, you see different things different ways, and not all of them might be equally important for every brand, especially in some of those examples that you cited, like with Mountain Dew there. So I think that that's a really neat way of doing that. So yeah. If folks listening want to do one thing different, what would you recommend that be? Something that most probably aren't currently doing or currently thinking about in a certain way?
Well, I think it's actually fairly similar to the idea that we talked about a little bit earlier in this conversation, and that is, you know, once you've identified that point of difference, maybe you've gone through the exercise of those four lenses, those four journalist questions, if you will, and you've identified what differentiates you and makes you better and superior to competitive alternatives, it really is about that gap bridging, right? And making sure that your positioning is something more than just an academic exercise, right? And something that sits on a shelf and never gets used. Once you have that, use that as, when you call it a filter or a lens, you apply it to every aspect of your business. And I think over the years, that's where I've seen our clients go awry most often, right? They can actually identify what it is that's different about them, but it's an entirely different skill set and activity to bring it to life, right? To activate against it and to do so consistently and continuously in a manner that is on brand. Very often they've got the idea, but yet the way they go to market with all their tactics, whether they're digital or analog, and they do it in a way that is not consistent with that brand promise. And they really do themselves a disservice.
I think that is an important reminder, but also a warning as well. So as we start to wrap things up, what is a brand that has made you smile recently? That's a different lens from talking about being indispensable to smiling. Sometimes they're the same, but how about a smile?
Sometimes they are. You're right. You know, there's a brand that has become, and they're actually featured in my book, The Indispensable Brand, that I would say makes me smile. It's become a favorite brand of mine in very recent months, and that is it's the spinning brand Peloton. That is, for those of your listeners that may not be aware, Peloton is a spinning brand, exercise, right? Spin bikes. They have classes and a studio in New York City, and they sell bikes and now even treadmills. And I think they do just a terrific job of staying on brand. I actually had the opportunity to interview their vice president of marketing for the book, and she talked about the essence of their brand is it's really not about the bike itself or the classes. It's really about this notion of showing up in life and how what you learn on that bike, you know, through pushing yourself and challenging yourself and, bonding with others, because that's the whole notion of Peloton, how that can help you in other aspects of your life, socially, career-wise, with your family, et cetera. And I am somebody who used to hate stationary bikes and spinning, and it has totally changed the way I view that activity, and it's become my go-to workout. So I'd have to say that that's a brand that makes me smile in that respect.
I love that. That's a great example and a great brand, and awesome that they're a big part of the book. Mitch, yeah. Where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Sure. There's a few things. So my company's name is Full Surge. That's FullSurge. One word. That's the name of the consulting firm. And we are at FullSurge.com. When you go to the website, there is actually a landing page on there that's fairly visible, fairly evident. And that is about the book, Indispensable Brand. So if any of your readers are interested, or listeners rather, are interested in reading the book, it can be, there's a link there to Amazon where it can be purchased. And there's also the opportunity to download two chapters for free. And they're really two of the most important chapters that kind of set up the premise for the entire book. So I would invite your listeners to do that if they're so inclined. And also, just personally, I am on LinkedIn and Twitter. So Mitch Duckler, MitchDuckler on LinkedIn, and at Mitch Duckler on Twitter.
Awesome. Well, we will link up to all of that in our show notes. Mitch, thank you for joining us on Brand.
Thank you, Nick. It was a pleasure to be with you.
And remember, if you find this show indispensable, you can head over to Apple Podcasts, give us a quick rating and review, help others find the show. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.